Well, since there's no greater sign of government hypocrisy than America purporting to be for democracy and it being an ally of Israel and demanding that Israel capitulate and surrender to the Muslims that wish to destroy it, this might be the perfect time to speak with Sam, who's calling in from Hawaii, that is also disturbed by government hypocrisy. Hello, Sam. Welcome to Shattering Myths.
How you doing?
Good.
Hello. I don't know what it is, if it's me that's disturbed or it's the world, but I'm sure it's the world. You guys are in New Hampshire?
No.
Where are you guys at?
That's irrelevant.
Okay. I thought I remember. I'm listening on the internet, so
okay.
I thought that this was the one that was in Keene, New Hampshire.
No.
But,
nope.
I live.
Nope. Nope. Where I broadcast from is changes, and it's irrelevant since I have about 1,000 death threats against me. I use an alias. That's why I use the alias Yada, and where I'm broadcasting from is irrelevant.
Well, I'm on the north shore of the Big Island of Hawaii.
Beautiful place. I go to Hawaii at least once a year. I prefer the Kona Coast is my favorite place in Hawaii, so I'm there. I'm there regularly. It's where I choose to go to vacation.
Yep, I'm in North Kohala. So, I was just listening to the show, and they were talking about some legislators legislating and trying to shape and create and make people do what they want. And I'm kind of bummed about the whole world affairs right now. It seems like the bankers are definitely ramping up for some kind of conflict. There's not much you can do about it. But if people are aware that, you know, the bad guys and the good guys are just a left-right paradigm, and you know, there's the whole thing is kind of it's just kind of a show, just, you know, to keep the machine going, the Leviathan Incorporated, and if everybody realizes that it's just one man behind the green curtain there pulling levers, you know, Toto is everyone.
Who is your one man who is pulling all the levers? Is you
well,
think that there
you
actually
know,
is a de facto dictator of the world?
Well, I guess it could be that one person could be more of a conglomerate of people and in a
so there's a conglomerate of people that are controlling the world, and what would this conglomerate be? Who is the conglomerate that you think is controlling this? Since it's not one person controlling the levers, who is the conglomerate that you think is trying to control the world? Bankers. Okay, so it's bankers. Now you're talking about private bankers like the Bank of America and Citibank, or you're talking about national bankers like the Federal Reserve, or you're talking about international bankers like the International Monetary Fund. Which one of those bankers, or is it just all bankers?
Well, if you start at the top, you know, if you start with the IMF and the World Bank, then you're getting closer to the source.
So you think that the IMF and the World Bank are institutions where they are collectively pulling the levers that control all humankind?
Yeah, you could say that.
Is that your theory? That's your theory. All right. Well, I appreciate you expressing that. All right. I'm going to go back to Paul's letter. And I will just say this before I do. This notion that the whole world is being controlled by a singular entity and that the entity is the Illuminati, that the Illuminati is the Round Table or the Bilderbergers, that the entity is bankers, that the entity is the big corporations, is utter nonsense. It's part of the same mentality that conceives the myth of conspiracy theories based upon all sorts of conjecture. It just isn't true. Now, is it true that the IMF and the World Bank are counterproductive organizations and that the world would be better off without them? Absolutely. Are they into redistributing wealth and gaining control? Absolutely. Federal Reserves in cahoots with them? Absolutely. Counterproductive? That is true. But this idea that all of the world's banks are leagued together somehow, and that they really are the control mechanism of the world, not politicians who control the militaries, it's just not true. To expose and condemn the malfeasance of international bankers, where the IMF will use American taxpayer money, it really is American taxpayer money because America is bankrupt, which is create the illusion of money, and give it to the malcontents in the Ukraine to go off and bludgeon ethnic Russians, to re-engage in another Cold War against Russia, to prevent Russia from being an effective contributor to an international currency that replaces America's status with its dollar being the de facto reserve currency of the world. To look at that and understand those are bad things. Oh, that's a good thing to do. But there isn't a person pulling the levers. And these guys don't have club meetings where they get together at club control and say, ha, 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 what are we going to do today? I know, we'll be responsible for global warming. Oh, that didn't work so well because the world's cooling. We'll call it climate control, and we're going to use that. That'll be our ploy. And then we'll declare the war on terrorism, and we'll get every head of state to surrender their sovereignty and to do what we tell them to do. And we'll do it in a way that no one else even knows we're doing it. Come on. It's all make-believe. Stop it. All right. Shaul's rambling introductory sentence. As we made our way through Galatians 1, 2, and 3, it was filled with lies. But the statement in Galatians 1, 4, which is a continuation of this run-on sentence, is the one that's the worst because he establishes his point. This is the basis of his new religion. That religion is Christianity. Paul is the founder of the Christian religion. It doesn't exist without him. He's author of half of a Christian New Testament. And this is the basis of Christianity. The one having given himself on account of the sins of us so that he might possibly gouge or tear out us from the past inflexible and unrelenting circumstances of the old system, which had been in place, which is disadvantageous and harmful, which is pornographic, poneros, down from and in opposition to the desire and the will of the God and the Father of us. He has his Jesus Christ in opposition to the Torah, taking us away from the Torah. That is the opposite of what Yahusha actually said. It's the opposite of what Yahweh has consistently said. It is an overt lie. He came to honor the promises of the Torah. He came to be the living embodiment of that system. He observed that system. You can't follow him without observing the Torah, without meeting with God on the days that he himself became the living embodiment of those days, of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, and the promise of seven. He didn't come to take us away from that system, but to facilitate our access to that system. And it's the only system. It's the only plan God's got. It's got only one path. That's it. Take it or leave it. The antithesis of what Paul said here is true, and yet this is what Rome and then the Roman Catholic Church sought to do, to obliterate that system, to go to war with the chosen people and the promised land and the very God that created the universe so that man could create religions like Paul is doing here. than empower humans over God. Now, the word that was used to describe that old and inflexible system, aionos, was used by Paul in his letter to the Colossians. So let's examine how Paulos used it there to, and what he had to say about the mysterious and hidden animals. This discussion begins with the self-proclaimed apostle arrogantly and erroneously presenting himself as the co-savior and as the co-author of his new religion in Colossians 1:24 and 1:25. Now, he established the religion in his first letter, that to the Galatians, and now he is demonstrating that he himself is the co-savior and the co-author of his new religion, playing an equal role with God. He writes, "Now, at this time, I rejoice, I embrace and hail, I thrive and benefit in the sufferings and misfortunate afflictions for your sake. And I actually complete that which is deficient and lacking of the afflictions of the Christu in the flesh of me for the benefit of the body of him who is called out, of which I myself exist, a servant, extended down from the administration and arrangement of this God, the appointment having been made and produced and granted to me, to you all, to complete and fulfill the word of the God." Holy mackerel. If you're rational, if you're informed, if you have an accurate translation of what Paul just said, you wouldn't just reject him, you'd hate him. You wouldn't just reject Christianity, you would despise it. You wouldn't just say, "Whoa, boy, there's some concerns there." You would distance yourself as far from this man and his religion and his letters as you could possibly do. When we return to Shattering Myths, we will consider what Paul actually said, what he claimed, and how utterly ridiculous it is. Deadly, even. We'll be back. Okay, so here's Paul. He's saying, "Now I rejoice, I thrive, I benefit in the sufferings and misfortunate afflictions for your sake." All right. So what he's saying here is that his suffering, his affliction, should there actually have been any, and I strongly suspect that Paul made it all up. He has this one place, and I think it's in Corinthians, but you'll find it if you read questioningpaul.com. Yeah, the whole book there, 1,000-plus pages called questioningpaul.com. I encourage you to go there. And Paul has this diatribe where he talks about how many times he's been killed, how many times he's been drowned, how many times he's been flogged, how many times he's been killed, how many times, you know, all of these things. You know, he's 50,000 leagues under the sea. The whole thing is just so fanciful and so utterly over the top. You just have to laugh. And so I think that all of Paul's sufferings were really made up. Now, beyond that, what you have here is that Paul's saying that these sufferings that he's claiming to have endured were for the sake of those reading his letters, which would be Christians. So his sufferings were on behalf of Christians. How does his sufferings benefit a Christian? I mean, there's no way unless he is a partner with God and providing the suffering that removes sin. But the suffering that removes sin only is valid in the context of Passover and Matzah, and only valid if you happen to be perfect and you, as a perfect individual, in complete and total harmony with the Torah, voluntarily accept everybody else's crud. And then you pay the price for their crud because you're perfect. Paul wasn't perfect. He was a murderer. He was a liar. He was a kidnapper. Paul was a scumbag, and it got worse as he created Christianity. So as an imperfect murderer, aggressive, mean, abusive, kidnapping scumbag, any suffering that he endured would have been for his own malevolence. The opposite of Yahusha. And since he doesn't attribute any of his role as a Passover lamb, his role in unyeasting us on matzah and his soul going to Sheol to pay our penalty, then whatever suffering he has is irrelevant. Listen, I've written now 7,000 pages to help you understand who Yahweh is and to appreciate what he's offering so you can choose to get to know him and engage in the covenant. And I've done now thousands of radio broadcasts, in addition to thousands as a guest host on radio stations, but thousands of programs like these, sharing audibly what God is offering, what he is encouraging us to disassociate ourselves with and encouraging us to associate ourselves with. And, you know, during that time, I've endured 1,000 death threats. But let's just say that they went from death threats to the those who didn't want you to know these things actually coming in and flogging me or pulling out my fingernails or gouging out my eyes or doing anything like that. There's nothing that I would endure under those circumstances that would benefit anyone, not me, not the perpetrator, not you. Now, Yahweh cut me a deal, which said that I would be relieved from those things. And so I have not suffered. But should I have suffered? It would not have benefited you. It wouldn't have benefited me. To celebrate the fact that a person's suffering somehow benefits another is to place oneself in the position of the Savior. That's what Paul is calling himself here. But it gets worse. That he's now celebrating the sufferings and misfortunate afflictions for your sake. And I actually complete that which is deficient and lacking of the afflictions of the Christu in the flesh of me. Whoa! He's saying that Yahusha's sacrifice as the Passover lamb, as his soul went into Sheol, to permanently resolve all of our rebellion against Yahweh and to be perfect in his eyes was inadequate and incomplete. Okay, that last commercial is troubling. That total transformation. And, you know, if the idea is I want my children to listen to me, and it's said in that tone, and because I want to share with my children what's those things that are good for them, beneficial for them, and those things which are counterproductive, which are, could be harmful to them. And I want to share those things with my children so that they grow and become happy, productive. If that's what you said, and you said it in that tone, then you're a loving mother trying to lift up your children. But the tone of this is that you're a lord, that you want your children to bow down before you. You want your children to submit to your authority. Now, these are commands. I demand. That's not a parent. That's a dictator. That's very troubling. Now, speaking of troubling, here in Colossians, Paul not only said that his sufferings, his personal sufferings, aided and abetted the faithful, that would be Christians, which is utterly nonsense. But he goes way beyond nonsense. I mean, a lot of people are stupid. I've been stupid at times. Yeah, a lot of people are stupid. And you know, if Paul was just stupid, you'd say, all right, you know, I mean, obviously, you need to discard him. But this goes way beyond stupid. He next says that he completed that which his Christo was unable to do. He said, I actually complete, I fulfill in his sufferings, in his afflictions, I complete, I fulfill, I make up for that which was otherwise deficient and that which is lacking, needed, missing, absent from the afflictions of Christ in the flesh of me. For the benefit of the body of him who is in the called out, the ecclesia, of which I myself exist as a servant. Extending down from, he's going to go on to his, all of his divine credentials. But, folks, there is no way to render these words any other way than Paul was claiming that, to use the Christian name, Jesus Christ was inadequate. To use the correct name, Yosha failed as the Passover lamb. That he was inadequate on what he did on matzah with his soul descending into Sheol. That his celebration of Bikurim didn't accomplish the task. And that the final celebration of seven Sabbaths, which empowers and enriches us, that was all make-believe. Those people, they didn't know that they were being benefited. It was all that fulfillment with all of those people, including the disciples in the upper room, on Bikurim and on Shavuot. No. That really didn't happen because his sacrifice was inadequate. It's my suffering, Paul writes, that fills in what was missing. Ooh, that's not stupid. It's blasphemous. It's man claiming to be God. Yes. The God of the Pauline Christianity is Paul. He's the Savior. That's what he's claiming here. He's announcing that he is the Savior. Now, he's not the total Savior. He's saying, Jesus Christ, he accomplished something. He wasn't up to the task. He really couldn't do it all. And so, me, myself, and I, we were needed to complete the rest of it. So, I've been killed a bunch of times. I've suffered all of these blows. A bunch of times I've been drowned. A bunch of times I've been flogged. A bunch of times I've been stabbed. I've gone through all of this because his suffering was inadequate. I'm not only the co-savior. I'm the guy. I'm the one that did what is of real benefit to you. If you're a Christian and your religion is based upon this idiot, this demonically inspired text, you're in serious trouble. Yosha did everything that was required. Yosha is the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. Yahweh honored his promises just as he said he would. There's nothing lacking. Nothing more needs to be done. Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah have been enabled, have been empowered, have been authorized, have been honored. Every aspect of what needed to be done has been accomplished. The path has been paved. It is available to you. Yahweh shines his brilliant light, his word, on that path. You can choose to walk down it away from bastards like Paul and into the loving arms of Yahweh, or you can choose to wallow in this ignorance, to wallow in this blasphemy, this disgusting arrogance and outright lies. But that's what Paul said here. Make no mistake. And he's doing it, he claims, for the body of those who are the called out. This was whole Paul's concept of that he was creating a body of believers. Yeah, right. Yeah, well, if Satan needed a body of believers, he got one. You know, he created Islam 600 years after this for the express purpose of creating a religion to worship him for absolute idiots. That's what Islam is. For aggressive, ruthless, hateful morons. Islam is Satan worship for the stupid. But you know, everybody in the world's not stupid. Everybody in the world's not enraged. Everyone in the world's not deadly. So you need a religion, Satan does, to befuddle more than just those who are enraged, who are hateful, who are murderous. Christianity. But we'll start it with a guy who was enraged and murderous. But we'll make this religion appeal to those who are pacifists. We'll make this religion appeal to those who can easily be befuddled. Yeah, we won't weave this religion, like the last one, out of an outright set of lies. No, we'll weave this one with some strands of truth to make it appear believable. This won't be for the stupid. It'll just be for the comatose. For those who don't care enough about their own soul or the souls of their children or their loved ones to actually do a little research, to actually think about any of this, to examine evidence, and to make conclusions that are rational. That's what we'll do with Christianity. We'll make it an extension of the Roman Empire for the purpose of those who are just going to go along to get along. And Paul will be our apostle, the demons collectively decided. So he is direct edict, the one who has extended himself by the administration and the arrangement of this God. God chose Paul to complete the sacrifice. That's what this says. The appointment having been produced and granted to me, he writes, to complete and fulfill the word of the God. Well, you know, there's only one place in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that Paul has mentioned. It's in Habakkuk, in the second chapter. And it tells us that there would be this individual who would come about at the time the Moed were being fulfilled, which is this time we're talking about right now, Paul's time. And that this individual would be presumptuous. Oh, boy, you can't get more presumptuous than this. That he would be egotistical. Pretty hard to be more egotistical than this. That he would use twisted reasoning. And that he would seek to influence Gentiles. That's what Paul claimed to be his own turf. That his principal argument would be against circumcision, even though he himself would be fascinated with the male genitalia. Paul was a homosexual who was wholly opposed to circumcision and therefore the sign of the covenant. And of this individual, the one time Paul is mentioned in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh specifically says by name, calling him by name, that he is the plague of death. And he says that no one who believes him will be satisfied. Not anyone. So, yeah, in a way, by making this statement, Paul did fulfill what was written in the Word. Now, if you look at the Word as being the promises that Yahweh uttered in throughout the Torah about this path that he was providing to him about his role as our Savior and Liberator, our instructor, our teacher, then no, Paul is the antithesis of that. It is one thing for someone to say, I demand that you do something, and you claim no divine authority to do so. President Obama, what he did on Sunday. It's immoral, it's improper, it's presumptuous. There's a lot of things that are it's bad about that. But Obama didn't say, in the name of Allah, in the name of God, I demand that you you withdraw from Gaza. That's what Paul did. He claims that he was authorized by God, that God specifically appointed him to this task of completing the sacrifice for the benefit of Christians. When you do that, you become the plague of death. That is an unforgivable sin. I'm going to take just a really small departure back to what we're talking about in the first and second hour. You know, I was thinking about Israel's release of where Israel has this quote-unquote a denial. It's not a denial at all. This is what Israel said. This is the message from the Prime Minister of Israel regarding the release of the audio of a 35-minute conversation between President Dictator Barack Hussein Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu. It says, it is shocking and disappointing that someone should fabricate a private conversation between two world leaders and represent it as a leak. Most people would take that as fabricate means to create a fictitious account. But look what fabricate means. Look it up. Someone would make, manufacture, produce, construct, engineer. You know, when this show goes from the live stream and broadcast to the archives, it is Randy operating the board that is fabricating the archive, making the archive, manufacturing the archive, producing the archive. The recording is a production of the conversation. It's the engineer recording the conversation. Shocking and disappointing that someone should make private conversations between two world leaders and represent it as a leak. It wasn't a leak. It was given to record it knowingly, given knowingly by the United States to Israel. Israelis aren't saying that it's fraudulent. They're not saying it really wasn't Netanyahu on the tape. They're not saying that it wasn't Obama on the tape. They're not saying that it wasn't the conversation they had on Sunday. They just say that it's disappointing that that the fabrication, the creation of the audio was presented as a leak. You have to be really careful when you examine what people say. Just as in the case here with Paul, you got to be careful. If you're thoughtless and you just read through this, oh, well, Paul was so committed to the message that he endured all of those sufferings, and it just shows how committed he was, and he endured through all of the sufferings. Oh, yeah, read the list of sufferings sometime. It is so laughable. You believe that he endured those things, and that him enduring those things was to bring you this message. Listen, when Yahweh asked me to expose and condemn Islam, and I say, find somebody who's qualified. I'm not qualified, and I really don't want to do that. God says, well, negotiate with me. I'm open to negotiation. This is a discussion. I work through people. I don't force anybody to do anything. What do you want? Well, if I were to do it, I want my home protected. I want my family protected. Muslims have a tendency to go off and cut off the heads of those they don't like and to kill their children. I'm pretty uncomfortable about doing this. And the guy said, okay, fine, I'll take care of that. Protect your home. Read Psalm 91. I will set my messengers, my envoys, to protect you and your home. No matter how many thousands of slings they throw against you, it's not going to affect you. Was there any benefit whatsoever to God allowing Muslims to rip me to shreds to try to save Muslims from Islam and us from their religion? No. Do you think that there was some benefit of God? If God wanted this man to contradict everything he had to say, that God said, you know, I'm completely incompetent. I'm a lousy communicator. I'm an impotent savior. I've screwed it all up. I've made a mess of it. This guy I know can fix it all for me. And so I'm going to give him the authority to do that. And even though I'm totally incompetent with my Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and my way is not able to save anyone, I'm going to spare this guy of trauma. Well, maybe it's the same God. Yeah, God said, no, I'm not capable. Not capable. So, no, he's just going to be beat to a pulp. Because, why? Because he wants to make himself come across as a martyr. Because martyrs are revered in society. Not unlike the Muslim mindset today. It's the basis of Islam and early Christianity.